That's the music of Cyberchomp on WMSC from their brand new CD. It's called Our Wizards of Earth, and the wizards are here.
Hello.
Hi Jim. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hello, hello.
Well, first thing I want to talk about, because we're going to talk entirely about this CD tonight, and the first thing I want to talk about is, why did it take so long? It seems like this is the longest CD you took to record.
Well, not only did it take a long time from the time we finished one to this one, actually, this was the one we started before Sankara.
Oh, so even longer.
That's right.
Yeah, we kind of wrote.
Well,
ran
I can
into
see the interruption. Yeah.
Was that the one? I remember we did have that moment where I think we looked at each other, and I don't know if you thought what I was, but we were like, it's over. It's probably over. and then we just like went away and let it go for a little while, and then all of a sudden we came back with a bunch of new stuff.
Uh-huh. I think we were just taking ourselves too seriously.
Yeah.
Is what it was. So.
Now this is album.
Shrugged that off.
Yeah.
Real easily.
Is this album number 5
or 7?
7. 7. Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah.
So
in about as many years too.
No.
Yeah.
No, because the first release was in 2000. We've had a couple that took about 18 months, and then the rest of them were all your projects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one took 18 months, really, right?
Well, actually, longer than that.
Well, it's 18 months since our last release, so.
Yeah.
I think. Or 2 years, maybe.
2 years.
2 years since our last release.
Yeah, and maybe it seems longer because you teased me with a couple tracks beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, if you started this before Sankara, then your minds were elsewhere. And why did you shelve it? Were you just not ready to go into this direction?
Well, that's our normal process.
Yeah, we do. We, you know, there's a lot of songs that we were working on that didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, about 4 of these songs were in the process, and the rest of them are all new.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think I was pushing for an album like this, and,
mm-hmm.
and Mark was going along with it for a while, and then somehow the story is we were up here and Becky, my wife, and Teresa, his wife, Mark's wife, we were all listening one night, and we loved what we were doing. Then the next night, we changed a little thing on one of the mm-hmm. songs, played it, and everybody hated it. I mean, all 4 of us.
We all hated it.
And that's when we decided, put that one away.
We were like, we suck. It's all over.
It's done. We've run out of...
Back to that.
That's it. It was really strange. The night before, we listened to these songs, and we were like, and we do that all the time. You know, we'll listen to the songs, and then we'll say, you know, make notes for tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and then tomorrow we'll get to, you know, we'll listen to the, you know, we'll tweak the thing, you know, like
sure.
Oh, take that bass line out, or replace this, or put a voice there, and that's what we did. We like made a little change, and then we listened to it again the next night, and we all just thought it was horrible.
Yeah, but it changed. We only changed one song, but mm-hmm. it changed the whole thought process. I mean, and I don't know. We just shelved it and decided to go with the ambient thing, which
uh-huh.
I'm glad we did, because we do that, as Mark says, clean our pipes out and start
uh-huh.
over again. So
sure.
That's exactly what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever we get to that, we usually then go do an ambient project.
So wait for the next one.
So we all know when the next ambient
they were
comes
stuck.
Out that they're... It's kind of like your writer's block.
Right, right.
Yeah. And I get, you know...
It's the eraser.
Yeah.
You know?
No, Mark and I both, you know, we've had... some life-changing experiences. He with a child,
mm-hmm.
and on my side, I've had 2 parents die in the last 2 years.
Oh.
And so it and the music actually reflects some of that. I mean, you know, because we were kind of, especially Sankara, I think for me, that was kind of like a process of getting that out. And then,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Sankara was, I think, for both of us, sort of a lot about aging and emotion and, you know, that.
We didn't know it at the time. Actually,
yeah.
We were just going to make an organic album, and it turned
mm-hmm.
out to be a lot more personal, you know,
yeah.
for some reason.
Yeah. Well, that's how it happens.
That's right.
Yeah.
We don't plan these things.
Yeah.
No, we don't.
Now, this particular CD, Our Wizards of Earth, which we have to get into that, like what the name of the title, this has a few more players on it than just you.
Yeah.
Just the 2 of you.
Yeah.
So it has a sort of a live recording feeling.
Well, that's
what we did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This album, the thing that was, it was really Jim's idea, was I had kind of griped that some of the albums that people really like, like Scientists in the Trees,
mm-hmm.
I always felt didn't sound like we played the stuff, because we had gotten so perfect at a
mm-hmm.
lot of the loops
mm-hmm.
that even though we played what's in the loop,
people just, I don't know, there was just a sense like, you know, you would even ask questions like, and you don't play instruments, do you? You know, it's, no, we play all the things that you hear, except a few, you know, like a lot of times drum samples and things are just things you're not going to get anywhere else. But most of it is things we've created.
Right.
And so, I guess that didn't bother Jim, but it really sort of got on me after a while. And I was just like, you know, we've got to really do something about this. And then Jim came up with this idea about, well, why don't we just like turn on the deck and start recording and do it the old fashioned way where we just kind of noodle around and we come up with, you know, we come up with an idea and then we just like, usually it is that we come up with a sound or something like that. And then we turn it on and we just start playing and we don't know where we're going or what we're going to do. And then with that, you get an idea laid out and then you start to edit it, you know, on the laptop and try to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say almost, am I right? Almost every song on this album really was from a jam.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as opposed to sort of the traditional way, you know, we don't, at least in this band, we don't write songs the way most people do. And the way I think we do on our own or in other bands, which is, you know, typically you sit down with your instrument, like your guitar or whatever, and you start to come up with some melody line or some lyrics, and then you flesh that all out and you build a verse and a chorus and all that. And we don't write our songs that way at all.
Right.
You know, we usually come up with something like today, you know, just kind of a weird repetitive sound that I created and I gave it to Jim and Jim had some chimes that he thought would fit it.
Mm-hmm.
And then those two had a strange rhythm together.
Uh-huh.
And then from there, that led us to some other thing like, oh yeah, well, okay, throw in a bass drum there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you build it from there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now the title of the CD, did that come first or did that come?
That's been laying around for a while, actually.
Mm-hmm. A schizophrenic person that I knew, a person who has schizophrenia that had said Scientists in the Trees to me once, said Our Wizards of Earth. And that was just a really fruitful day. So I wrote those things down and said, wow, these are cool. And kept them around maybe 8 years. I maybe it was the 90s when I heard those phrases.
Uh-huh.
And I just kept them around and I kept telling them to Jim.
Well, yeah, Mark told them to me. And actually, I think I was pushing for Our Wizards of Earth first.
Uh-huh.
We ended up with Scientists in the Trees because, you know, it didn't quite fit what we were doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, the one thing we want people to know is we're not the wizards.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's right. We're not
our wizards of Earth.
That's right. That's right. Our wizards of Earth. And now also the cover art.
Yeah.
A lot of times, well, in some of your other CDs, your images were actually in them, but I don't see them here.
Not a bit.
Not a bit.
No, Bogart did that, and boy, we love that. Actually, Mark has been trying to get me to use Bogart's early stuff that Mark had shown me was really, I thought, would have been great for a heavy metal album. So I waited till we had something that was not heavy metal, but
yeah,
you know, just a little heavier sounding, and that's, we went with this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did the artwork on Scientists in the Trees. Secrets to Tell You.
Yeah. J. Carl Bogart.
Mm-hmm.
And
is he local or?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but he's nationally known. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the Milwaukee Art Museum has three of his pieces, and he's an international, you know, artist.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just a phenomenal artist. I'd encourage anybody to take a look at him. And if you, he's just one of those, you know, one of those many people that live in Milwaukee that you kind of go, that guy lives in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
You know, and we do. We have a number of people that are like that are sort of, you know, artists and poems, mm-hmm. poets and people like that are just phenomenal at a international level, but they live here in a quiet way that nobody knows they're really here.
How did you guys meet him?
I met him through John Kruth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's one of his pals, and then we met and hit it off because we both, I think, have a sort of a twisted, dark, surrealist way of looking at things. And in fact, Bogart and myself have written a number of some poems and things like that together, as well as we have a script for a film that we're hoping to get done.
Which he's never showed me any of this stuff. He's told me about this, but don't know.
Some of it's on the internet.
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah, so we've done
really?
Some. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Show me where it is.
Now, the song that we just heard, Fantastic Dream, was inspired by your son.
He wrote the lyrics. Yeah, Alex wrote the lyrics to Fantastic Dream. Yeah, he basically said, Papa, I want to tell you, it's going to be fantastic. And I was like, wow, that's cool. So then I wrote that down.
Was he referring to the album?
No, I don't know what he was referring to. Just it.
Something
in the future, in the moment. Yeah. You know, it was going to be fantastic. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't about anything as far as I could tell. It just was like something he said all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kids do that. So, you know, you got to write those down then and save them.
So Mark sends it to me. No, actually, he tried to put it in.
This song started differently.
Actually, key word about this song is something I've never really said in association with talking about your music, lyrics.
That's right.
Yes, it's true. Very short lyrics, but we have some in here.
This song started as a full lyric song, right? And I think they just didn't work. You know, I was trying too hard.
Uh-huh.
It was like a whole song of lyrics, like a Pink Floyd thing.
Uh-huh.
And
Mark goes, I don't know how you can do this. I send you something that sounds like Pink Floyd, and you send it back, and it's totally destroyed.
Right. Yeah.
Pretty lovely.
Dismantled. Okay.
And I came up with the idea of putting, you know, it's nice four lines right in the bridge there, or the break part. And, I took my vocal and I doubled it, and then I changed the key on one of them that you'd never sing like that in a million years.
Mm-hmm.
It just had this weird thing to it that Mark could sing off of.
In my notes, I had mentioned, and we talked about this earlier, that that opening track has like a 60s psychedelic feel to it. You know, the sound of the guitars and the drum sound and everything. And that's something you were aiming for this album.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's really my roots. And, you know, Mark and I are a few years apart in age, and we have different backgrounds, although we listen to the same kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want, you know, because I think that music's very important in just about everything you listen to today has got roots in it.
Right.
You know? And I thought, well, it's just kind of an homage to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can relate to that. I mean, I like trancey psychedelic stuff, so
mm-hmm.
I'm along for the ride on that.
Yeah.
You know, I gave him some of the room, you know, to go experiment with that. And, you know, I think this is much more of a rock and roll album than the stuff mm-hmm. we've done in the past. And
mm-hmm.
it was kind of fun to do that. And you were sort of saying this should be more of a guitar oriented album. And I thought, well, that's cool. You mm-hmm. know, let's go in that direction.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but I was complaining about, you know, well, I wasn't actually complaining. I was proud of the fact that I wasn't playing any guitar. And then I started slowly getting back into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one just seemed like one to rip it on, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely. And you do.
Well, not only me, but actually Mark picked up a guitar and did a couple of the solos on this. Does a great job.
Yeah, I was. That's one thing that I wanted to talk about because it is really guitar oriented, and I wanted to find out who did what because it's hard to.
Good luck.
Yeah.
I don't know if we remember.
All right. Well, let's take a. Listen to the second track because we do have 11 tracks on this CD.
Yeah. Why don't you run the next two together? They kind of go together.
You think so?
Sure.
Okay. The next one is Patience. It has a nice quiet driving beat to it. I like it. Very nice. And then Map of Your Heart with another vocal lyric. So.
Sorry.
Well, it's an
instrumental show.
Yeah. No, it's all right. I have to kid you about it. This is Cyber Jump on WMSE.
Thank you.
to Cyber Chump on WMSE from their CD, Our Wizards of Earth. I like that lyric very much, and I think it should be in a movie.
Yeah.
That song, it's very good. It just, you know.
Where's David Lynch when
I can see the. I know, I can see the plot, you know.
Well, that lyric, we have a map of your heart. It goes to nowhere. The idea, you know, I mean, I just, I think you said it in a break, too. The feeling I had about that was sort of like, that you're laying in the hospital, and the doctors come, and they say, we have a map of your heart. It goes to nowhere. And you'd be like, well, of course. You know, that figures.
Exactly. You found me out.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, what we're hearing in the background is from your CD, Secrets to Tell You, a track called Plateau. And you actually use this, or actually the first, the way Mark says it, is that Patience was reworked.
The song before Map of Your Heart that we played.
Yeah. The first song.
Is this it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
What? Because I know, because remember I said to you right away when the song started playing, I said, I really like the sonar sound of it. And then you said, well, it's because it's reworked from, and this has the great sonar sound.
It's part of our, what are we calling it?
What do you mean?
Composting process.
Oh, yes. That's right.
You know the term. Where
this is a green album.
And it just... I don't know whether we intentionally do it, but it seems just the right thing to do. Sometimes it's like the song is finished, and yet there's parts in it that you can see taking you to another area. And that's kind of what we've done. And there's three songs on this album that actually have that that thing going on in it.
Yeah. Well, to me, it provides the signature of Cyberchump.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, because I know I can, I knew from your liner notes and also just from listening to it that, you know, you borrow sounds from yourself, but that's your signature. And, you know, to me, you know, like I said, there's a couple songs in here that are very cyber chumpy. And, you know, and it's, you know, it's, but that's what you guys do.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, we, you know, it's, and like Jim's saying, there's times that you have a song, and actually I think the way this worked was Patience was done first, and then we stripped it, and it got released as Plateau, which is the song you're hearing now in the background.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's happened a few times.
You know, we actually had an ulterior motive for that, now that I think about it. We were trying to get an ambient compilation, and that's when we did that.
Okay, right. Yeah, so we'll like do
it's a
that.
A compilation that never happened.
Yeah,
right. Some of our music has a lot of layers to it.
Yes.
So there's times that we hear, you know, and as Jim's saying too, and I think there's one today we're working on that was sort of like you hear this template, there's sort of this palette, and then you think, oh, we could take it in this direction, and you do that, but then you sort of like still maybe have a nagging regret or something that there was this other road that you didn't travel.
Sure.
And maybe, you know, you kind of tuck that away, and 2 years from now, one of us might pull that back out and go, hey, you know, why don't we go that direction that we didn't go last time?
Well, the two songs are so vastly different. And, you know, I think it's fabulous that you can do this.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, they are two completely different songs. I mean, they're not like this is another version of that song.
Right.
They're a starting point that goes in a completely different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even a different key. It's totally different rhythm. Like this one has no rhythm.
Right.
You know, except for a floatiness to it. And it works really well for us. I don't know about other people, but we'd like to do it that way.
Or it may not even be a starting point. It may not be, you know, the basic idea that you laid down a foundation and you took it in two different directions. It could be that you did a song and then you say, oh, let's pull out all these things. And then it totally morphs into a different song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we did that quite a bit before with some things from like Abstract Air was that way, that album. That, you know, we had taken things off our first two albums and thought, oh, you know, that could be an ambient song.
Yeah.
You know, so it's we go back and forth with it that way. And nowadays, given that all the files are on a laptop, it's much easier than it used to be. Before, we used to have to sort of cut and paste it and move it around, and it was real difficult.
It was early digital. It was actually on a they call a mini disc, and it's more like working on tape. So you actually had to move things around. It's more like tape editing.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, you know, I guess you could refer to your music as frame of mind sort of recording. Because you know, your frame of mind was totally different for this as it was for Patience. And, you know, it's
I mean, when I hear this piece now, I haven't heard this piece for a couple years. You know, wow. You know, when I listen to it now, I think, wow, I'm not there. I don't know if I could do this piece now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's something to this piece that I'm not in that place anymore.
Turn Jim up a little.
Fine. There you go. That's fine. Thank you.
Yeah. Which is interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other song, like we said, Map of Your Heart, that started, that was on Sankara as Tremor.
Uh-huh.
And it was, a very different sounding song, instrumental. You know, and this really turned more into a pop song, I think, now, is Map of Your Heart.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when the two songs that we redid from Sankara started out as electric piano pieces that I started.
Uh-huh.
And they were very different than everything else on there. Mark goes, I can hear this with beats. I can hear it with beats. And I said, well, it's okay, but it's not going to be now, you know. And then he sent me these files. I had no idea he was working on them. And he sent me these files. Well, actually sent me one, Map, and then the other one, Chatter, he actually played for me when I came up here. And I go, what is that? And he goes, well, don't you recognize it? I'm like, no. And we worked from that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even recognize it.
Yeah. Now, what made you have so many players on the CD? You have in the past in your other CDs, but this one, it seems... You know, there's more. You've got...
That's kind of a... those are people that have played with us in the past. Literally, that stuff, we have archive material of people that played. And we, of course, reuse samples and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this is a pretty lonely project. We went back and, you know, we were lonely, so we brought the samples out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There are some... it's misleading because, you know, we credit everybody who's on the disc, though they may have been playing for us 5 years ago on a different disc, a different song, and then we took that part.
Sure.
Like Jason Lovall, the violin player, he basically played on another song of ours, I think on Tango Noir, perhaps, and we stole that off of there, and then chopped it up and moved it around, and then it was one of those things that just sort of fit. Like, I mean, Jim fixed it, I kind of just laid it in, but it just fit, and it was like, oh my God, how does this violin part that he played on a different song just totally, the key changes, everything just fit.
Wow.
How does that happen? It was perfect. I mean, we kind of tweaked it to make it fit exactly.
Yeah, I never went back to look at exactly where that came from. I think it was an alternative take for one of the songs we were doing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because the time that Jason came up to play for Secrets, actually, Mark's going to like, he just left the room because he didn't think anything was happening. And we ended up recording stuff for three songs. Then I took the stuff home and started putting it in there, and he's going like, you guys recorded that then? Go, yeah.
Oh.
And he's going like, I didn't think anything happened that night.
Must have been a mood.
Well, you know, it's actually pretty interesting that you know, I thought that actually some of these were because of the
Like the drum,
feel.
You know, like Tim Higgins, that he went and
came
played
and
drum, you know. And
played to the track.
But, you know, you're speaking to something we were really trying to do, though. It was trying, you know, that was the idea of the jamming, to kind of get the feel of the song that way. Because, you know, we actually played a lot of these songs all the way through from point A to point B, you know, and then went back and sculpted it. So I think that's what gives it that coherent feel. It's not built up as so much. And then it's easy to make it feel live, you know, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but,
right. We might drop in, you know, somebody who played a tabla for us in another song and how he fits this song. But really, that's a minor point. You know, the main essence of all of this work was that it was based on jams that we did together live.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Excellent.
I concur.
Yes. Well, let's go into... the next track, Storm A Comin'. Storm's A Comin'. And I really like this one. This also has some of your sonar sounds in it, in the very, very beginning of it, I believe. And the drums. Now, this also has the feel of live drums playing to the track.
Well, it's interesting. This is the first. This was actually the first experiment that we jammed. And actually, this thing, the basic tracks except for the bass, some additional drums, and the keyboard parts, we recorded live at one thing. Because I was using a lot of loopers, so actually I was playing two or three parts at once. Mark's playing a synthesizer just flat out, wide open.
And
it was amazing because we got through with that thing. We're going like, do we really do that? Because, I mean, we were really listening to each other and playing off each other a lot.
Yeah. I like the bass riff in here, too.
Yeah, and then I kept on saying I want to use this song. And Mark is, well, if you can do something with it. So I took it, and it's actually edited down. It's shorter than it was. And I tightened it up. But I didn't move anything around. The sounds you hear playing together are the way we played them. So maybe it might be shorter. We might have taken a section here or there. But really, that is the way we played it for the most part.
And do you remember when you recorded this, when you first did the jam?
It's 3 or 4 years ago, actually.
Yeah. I mean, at any given time, we have 10, 20 things laying around.
Yeah.
So there's just lots of unfinished work that we have, and it all goes in different directions and different moods.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually what happens is we end up finding, oh, we're kind of, this is working for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find we discover what the direction is. We don't usually set out on that course.
Sure.
In fact, one of the things I thought I might bring up is that the way that we approach things, and the reason that all of our albums are different, I think, in terms of sound, is that we don't tend to set out and say, this will be our this album.
Mm-hmm.
What we tend to do instead is it's a lot of times Jim, one of us will suggest a way of making music. And usually on every album, we have certain constraints that we agree on.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll say, you know, this is an album that we will only do this or this, and we won't do that.
Sure.
And so by doing that, we like right now we have certain pieces of equipment that we're kind of limiting ourselves to, and we're telling ourselves we're only going to use like these kind of pieces of equipment, and that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
And it forces you to approach the music different.
Sure,
and
then provides a challenge.
Exactly. And because of that, it forces you to think different, and then your music ends up sounding different.
Uh-huh.
So it isn't really like, oh, we're going to make an album that's more guitar-oriented. It's more like, oh, we've got some new toys that are all for the guitar. Let's play with these toys, and that's what we'll focus on. And then you end up with that, right? I mean, so that's what we've tended to do. You know, we approach the equipment completely different. So we usually don't set up, the same way every time.
Yeah.
So I think that's why we end up sounding completely different in every album.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good way to do it. I like it. That's the music of Cyberchump from our Wizards of Earth and a track called Storms a Comin'. I do like that gritty guitar wash sound and the keyboard stuff. And we were talking in the break about how you guys have recorded it from the jam. And I think Mark started the washes. with the keyboard sound?
Yeah, I was kind of doing just that weird, you know, like kind of stuff. And for me, I was thinking space rock, but I was also just kind of thinking that whole 70s kind of Tangerine Dream kind of screaming keyboard kind of stuff, you know? And a lot of that sort of German krautrock keyboard thing is at least where my head was at during a lot of this. And that's probably my equivalent of Jim's kind of 60s psychedelic guitar rock guy.
Yeah, and, you know, I love the way, I think the sounds really blend well with each other. You can hardly tell what's a guitar and what's not.
Yeah, exactly.
But I also had two delays going at the same time, so all the guitar parts were recorded at the same time. So we had three guitar parts and the keyboards going on. So it was quite a cacophony of sound trying to separate it when we were playing.
Yeah, I had a keyboard loop thing going on where it was making all these sounds in the background that are happening.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that's why a lot of it sounds very full, but you know, it's like, well, how do they do most of that at one time? But
toys.
Yeah, it's a lot of toys. It isn't really a lot of overdubbing, at least not in that song. I mean, there's a few things. Obviously, I came back later and did the bass and things like that.
Now, this is a song that definitely could be played live. Don't you think?
Cell phone's getting something.
What? You guys are giving
me... I hope they can hear that on radio. But
yeah, I can hear it on my headphone.
Oh, I couldn't hear it.
Yeah. And you know, you were asking why, you know, I was telling you it was a 9-minute song, and you wondered why it was shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one thing we've always tended to do is take songs and try to get them to what we feel is the perfect length. I mean, when you're listening to a song and you're living with it for a long time, you get a sense if it's too long, if it's, you know. And sometimes I've gone back and had to take out just four beats to make it what I thought was perfect.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And going back and listening to it years later, I feel like I did the right thing usually, you know.
Yeah.
And in this one, we took out probably 4 minutes of music, you know, trying to just tighten it up. Because that was a jam. I mean, it was just free form. I mean, there was a lot of stuff in there that, you know, a lot of people would go, well, they're just noodling around. So you tighten it up and they make it an actual song.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of goes to something that I was telling Mark, we left off the liner notes. Our recording process, we dubbed oral sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, the reason is, it is like sculpting. You know, it's like taking something and making art from making it less.
Sure.
Know, by giving it its shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we do with our music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the other thing that we do, it's interesting to have to talk about this because we talk more here than we do.
Uh-huh.
We never talk this much about our music to each other. One of the things I think is that we sort of have this unwritten no noodling rule.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's really no noodling going on. And, you know what I mean? Like, typically when you do a jam, when I've jammed with people, they kind of noodle a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And noodling kind of drives me insane.
Yeah. But because it's noodling, just showing off.
Yeah, for what noodling, I think Mark means doing scales.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, all that stuff. And then we don't do that. What we tend to do are things like, I think sort of finding lines, melody lines and phrases, a lot of phrases.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll try to do that. And so it may be improvisational, but it's an improvisational phrase that we're playing with, as opposed to just playing like the scale or going, you know, picking those like five notes and keep playing them over and over again in different ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I mentioned this before, but I think you got distracted by your cell phone. But that last song is a song that could be played live on stage.
Yeah.
It could be, yes.
Yeah.
If
someone does.
More so than a lot of our songs, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean... I mean, you could do it a number of different ways, obviously. But, I mean, we made most of the music at once, yes. So,
yeah.
I mean, yes, you could do that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans for doing that? Is what I'm getting at?
No. Well, you know, well, no.
You could ask that a lot.
That one we can't figure out quite how to put it together through cyberspace.
Uh-huh. I guess.
Yeah. Well, you mean like you're in Kansas City, I'm in Milwaukee.
If we can figure that one out.
People watch and then we're somehow in... No, no. No, we have to actually get together in a room and...
But, you know, and playing out takes a lot of preparation.
Uh-huh.
To do... And I wouldn't want to go out there and just do it half...
Yeah.
I won't use the rest of the term. But, you know, I... You know, and it takes a lot of preparation to really do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now... if we could find a month where we could get together. And I, you know, to do it, I'd really like actually to take and have some other people play with us.
You know, right.
Really
yeah. To put together, show. You know.
Right.
Have but, you, I mean, we have those yeah. people.
Have
we
you seen Kraftwerk's live performances at all?
Or, no, you know, I didn't. DVDs? I didn't get to see it.
You know, four guys with a laptop just don't do much for me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
They're the only ones who can get away with it. Really.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, nothing to take away from those guys, but, I mean, that's not my idea of a live show.
Yeah. Well, you know, because I could see this music being created and having really, you know, cool psychedelic backdrop video.
Sure.
You know.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Go back to the old oils
right,
in the overhead projector thing.
Yeah, exactly. Pan oil. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so that was Storms A-Comin', and I did really like that. The next song that I do really like a lot is Chatter. And Jim, you were surprised that I liked it, but it's just very well developed. It's, you know, it's very layered. There's a lot of layering. There's but I really like the monster sound in there. It's like sounds like a monster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I love
it's
that very,
it's a
yeah.
backwards bass.
Very ominous, yeah. monsterish.
I don't
sound.
Remember where I mean, I played it, but I don't remember what song it's from.
I remember exactly what song it's from. When I first heard it, it was very skeletal. And what Mark had done was this is a song called Fragile off of Sankara.
Mm-hmm.
And he took my keyboard part and he reversed it. And he put this little glitchy beat to it. And that was all he had, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, we were listening to Lowe's Drums and Guns. I don't know if anybody's ever heard Lowe, but they're a band from Minneapolis. And they're considered... What's the name of it? Slow rock or slow core or something? I don't know. Some weird
slow core. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Slow core.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, they tend to be experimental, and their latest album, which is called Drums and Guns, they evidently got something like acid or something to record it on, because it's definitely done on a laptop.
Uh-huh.
And they were experimenting, and it really reminded me of what they were doing, and I really like these guys. So I thought, well, we got to do something with this. And Mark's going like, oh, this is just a throwaway thing. It's not anything happening. And slowly but surely, we built it up to make something go with it, you know?
Are you trying to play Fragile from Sankara?
Yeah, this is Fragile from... Yes? No.
What?
You have the wrong CD.
Do
yes.
I? That, oh, yeah, here it is.
That's a good song.
Yeah, you have to put the CD in the CD player.
Yeah. I thought that one was in already. Sorry.
All right, we need a nice fade now.
Oops. Yeah. As soon as the other one starts.
Yeah. So as we were saying.
As you were saying.
Fragile. This is Fragile.
No. Wrong song again.
No.
This is Tremor.
This is Fragile, number yeah, 7 right. from Sankara.
Put Tremor on.
Yeah.
From Sankara?
Yeah.
We don't even know what song it's from.
See, that was Map of Your Heart.
Right.
That turned into Map of Your Heart.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I can.
You can kind of hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this is Fragile or Tremor?
This is Tremor.
I don't even know what.
This is Tremor.
This is Tremor.
Right.
And this is what turned into
the
Chatter?
Chatter.
Yes. This piano part is what Mark reversed and sped up.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and, you know, when it first started out, that's all he had in there. And, of course, it comes in later in the song now because of the way we did the process. But, yeah.
You could probably just reverse an entire song and and add to
have
it.
Have you tried that yet?
No, I haven't done that yet.
And just add beats to it.
I think so. You know, and it's funny because I've reversed music for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you used to take the tape and just flip it around. Now it's so easy. It's just like, oh, that sample can be triggered backwards.
Many of our songs have something reversed in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do it all the time.
Yeah.
Usually it's leading up to things like cymbals so that it'll be backwards right before the cymbal hits.
Uh-huh.
We do a lot of that. You know, a lot of, and the one we're going to play in Chatter, I think what I did is I not only had his keyboard part, but then I had, as Jim was saying, I reversed a lot of the keyboard parts. So,
mm-hmm.
so it kind of plays, folds in on itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that there's a real really nice harmonic sound, and it might be a reverse keyboard.
That is the reverse keyboard.
Yeah, that's I really like
sort
that.
Sort of a feedback thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Going
well,
on.
It's just a harmonic tone.
Yeah.
It's really nice. And then the voices and the static. nice touch. I mean, that's what gives it the title.
Well, what I liked, and Mark came up with that, and I just love the rhythm interplay of it with the rest of the song. I mean, it really drives the song at the end. It's great.
Cool.
Okay, so let's take a listen to that. This is essentially the base of the song. And
this is where it came from, anyway.
This is where it came from, then we're going to hear how the new one comes in. Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Thank you.
And I like the really fresh triangle sound.
Oh, yeah.
That was
very good.
The original drum part was that triangle sound and the little ticky-ticky beats. And that was the only percussion on it.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
Uh-huh.
When I first heard it, it was just a stripped-down thing. And I could see a potential. And Mark goes like, I just did it to see what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of our stuff is, you know, that sort of experimentation, you know, where we're just kind of, you take the chance and you try it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a lot of times the person that starts it puts it aside, the other guy picks it up and does something with it, you know.
Yeah. I'm sure there are, and I think I've asked you this before, but, you know, are there songs that you have completely shelved?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot in the can that we keep on dredging up, and Mark goes, well, we listened to a couple last night.
Yeah, we listened to a couple last night, and then I regretted it. I was like, I was feeling real good about our direction, where we're going, and I thought, oh, there's like this two or three from the past that maybe would fit this. Mm-hmm. So you put them on your iPod playlist, and then we sit there and put them on, and then it was like, oh, no wonder we shelved those.
And why is that? I mean, is it just, like you said before, where sometimes if you make just a little small change and then it just ruins it? But
well, the one we were talking about last night, the issue is the bass, I think. You know, I've tried putting on a bass 2 times so far on that song, and it's just lackluster. Mm-hmm. And there's just nothing that happens. And then Jim finally said something like, you know, the thing is that the bass isn't grooving. It's not funky.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it should be funky. And so that if we decide to touch it again, that'll be at least like my job, I guess.
To funk it up?
Yeah, funk it up.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, more and more of my purposes in life is to be able to shake your booty. And,
uh-huh.
You know, it's like, I don't know, I just like music that grooves. Even if it's, you know, even it's funny to say, when we do our ambient pieces, I think they actually have rhythm to them. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I just, that's what I go for, is the rhythm. And I think we both focus on that, and I think we're becoming more and more focused on it, actually, and that's what we're trying to do.
There's a lot of rhythm in all of our music.
Yeah.
You know, and for being sort of, you know, ambient, down-tempo, chill, or whatever the heck it is that some people think we are,
right.
You know, and then I don't think a lot of that music has that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Some of it has it doesn't really groove. A lot of it doesn't really groove, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, or maybe it has sort of a white boy groove. And so we try in many ways to be a little more funky about what we're doing and really pay attention to rhythms.
Sure.
And not just rhythms in terms of beats, but rhythms in terms of, you know, how waves on an ocean have a rhythm, you know, that sort of rhythm, you know, just in terms of sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find that sometimes ending a sound is the most important thing to a rhythm, you know, making sure it's sharp and
sure.
With the beat, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's, we really focus on those things, how they interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's fun too, because you can kind of take a number of things and put them on top of each other, and then they create some rhythm that you never expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you guys, you had mentioned how, when you decide to, you know, put together a CD, you're going to, you limit yourself in order to challenge yourself, or is there any piece of equipment that you don't have that you would like to create an album with?
As far as equipment, I tend to gravitate towards delays. In fact, there's a couple of things I'm looking to get. I have a thing called an adrenaline, which is a mixture of a beatbox and a guitar amplifier that Roger Lynn created. And the latest version of that, I got to update it, so I'm going to do that.
Huh.
And then I'm always interested in delays. I'm a looper. I love,
sure.
I'm a loopy guy, I guess. But they got a new one out that Electro-Harmonix, who my first delays, long delays, 16-second delays were Electro-Harmonix, and they got a new one. And it's got an effect called Hazari on it. That's this bizarre thing.
Hazari.
Yeah, I gotta get it. I just gotta have it just to play with it.
What does it do?
Well, it takes long delay loops, and you can just process them. And it's unknown what will come out of it, actually. It just kind of takes the sound and scrambles it.
Wow.
And I like things like that.
And when he sets up, I mean, he tends to have sort of a train of all these different, a chain of all these different things that are set up. And I've taken after him too. And, you know, so like, but currently I've got like three items. So like we're doing some rhythms right now where I take this rhythm box I have and then MIDI connect it to the keyboard. And then it doesn't trip off drums. It trips off just interesting sounds in the keyboard instead of, but with a drum pattern.
Yeah.
So, but then strange like sounds in the keyboard. And then from that, I put it into a guitar effects box, which has like distortion, modulation, you know, overdrive,
sure.
you know, and reverb, echo, all of that kind of stuff.
You haven't used the Wah-Wah yet.
No, I haven't used the Wah-Wah.
Although I swear it's on one of these songs.
And then we, you know, you kind of throw it all through that and mute it. You know, I mean, mutate it. So it's kind of fun to be doing that right now.
Uh-huh.
But I tend to play my guitar effects box like an instrument in terms of it's on a table and, you know, I tweak the knobs
sure.
and everything on it.
Oh, that's
as opposed
cool.
to keeping it down at my feet, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So. Now I'm going just the opposite direction. I'm using virtual synthesizers now, which are in the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to figure out how, you know, actually I'm learning this stuff. This is the cyber chump in us, you know. It's
yeah.
like start with something you don't know and that's the record.
Sure.
Right. We always do that. I mean, Jim's idea this time was we were going to do all these VST plugins and just kind of, so we grabbed a bunch of free ones off the internet.
Of course,
and
he hasn't used one yet.
And what's a VST virtual?
Virtual synthesizer. I don't know what the T stands for.
Yeah, technology.
Technology, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but it actually is, you know, it resides in usually, your recording program has it embedded in it. So it actually records in MIDI
mm-hmm.
with the idea that you'd never convert that to a WAV file or something. But, of course, we have to because we don't have the same VSTs and stuff. So we never use technology the way it's intended, I
uh-huh.
give it to you.
We don't make it easy for ourselves ever.
Right.
For some reason.
Because you still pass it back and forth to each other.
Right, as MP3 files,
yeah.
usually.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've tried all these things, you know, where, you know, I have a lot of old recordings that I can't actually go back and remix because they were done in various equipment that were linked together.
Yeah.
And to get it back together again is just amazingly nuts. And so I'm never doing that again. It's all going to be on a WAV file or something in a report program that I can remix for very easily.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can you go
That's
back?
That's fun. We've never really talked about the toys we use. And,
yeah.
I mean, that's the fun part of it all, really, is having the different gear and different toys trying to figure out, you know, new ways to make them all work together and to change the chain and the order of the toys.
You can tell that we're not really musicians. We're more recording buffs.
Sure.
Because the fact of the matter is, you know, a guitarist, he'll have 300 guitars and about 50 amps, okay, to get his sounds.
Yeah.
And I have one guitar and a bunch of effects boxes.
Sure.
That's how I get my sound.
Right.
Now, have you ever just taken a drone sound and try to manipulate it into a beat?
haven't tried that one yet.
Yeah, we haven't tried that yet. We've worked with a lot of drones. I mean, we do a lot of drones.
But you know, but drones are inherently without beat. They're floating.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But you know, that's a good point. Thanks for the idea.
Okay.
We'll try it.
Okay.
I'll have to work on that.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. We have, what do we have next?
Sometimes cool.
Sometimes cool. Yeah. Sometimes cool. And let me see what I said about that.
Let's see. The lyrics make absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
You know, I don't
Violin
know.
Violin is great on this.
Jason Lovell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's in the Danglers. If you guys have, if you haven't gone out to see the Danglers, go see them.
Otherwise, that was my graphic.
Yeah. Go out and see the Danglers.
She's frowning.
Oh.
I wrote the lyrics to that. And actually, if you think about it, the lyrics actually are a reference to what's going on in the music. That's all I can say about it.
Okay.
Now, I can talk a little bit about the recording of the vocals. This okay. is the one you were talking about.
All right.
From my part of the vocals, because we always sing our vocals together, and mm-hmm. we have a few things that we always do. We tend to have some rules about that. One, that we usually sing together. We do tend to try not to have anybody be really like a lead. It's like a communal sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We also tend to sing in we and us
uh-huh.
and not I.
Sure.
So there are some things like that. And it's just philosophically, I think it just kind of feels right to come from that perspective.
We're a band.
That we're a band.
Yeah.
We're together. And, you know, it's
you're
we.
Scientists
and we're
and
not
trees.
Always, right. And we're
exactly.
not just always saying we like Jim and I, but we, you know, all of us.
As a mm-hmm. consciousness.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things I had done for this one is that I got one of those, what do they call it? Like a stenography? Is that what it's called? A dictation.
Dictaphone.
A dictaphone. I got a dictaphone. And with a dictaphone, you can speed up and slow down and kind of stutter it and things uh-huh. like that. So what I did is I recorded my vocals on the dictaphone
uh-huh.
and then I played with them. And that's why in the beginning you'll hear that there's sort of like a
yeah.
Because I'm playing with the actual speed of the vocal. It's not and it's an actual tape thing, a physical tape that I'm doing that with, as opposed to, you know, some digital trick.
Yeah. Now, how did you get that? How did you record that? The physical tape?
Microphone,
yeah.
Yeah. So I recorded, the vocal on a little mini tape,
voice recorder,
a little voice recorder, like the kind, you know, that you
yeah,
use
message.
In an office
yeah.
to make, you know, like memo to myself,
yeah,
you know,
right.
that kind of thing. And so I did that, and then I put, you know, you put that in the thing, and then you can kind of play with it, you
okay.
know. And the trick with that was, of course, if you're speeding up or slowing it down, then it's not going to match. How do you match your partner who was singing
right.
also? So you have to kind of like, if you speed it up, then you have to slow it down at some point later
up.
So that it'll stay all even. So that took a lot of time to
wow.
do that and get it to fit right in.
Well, and the other thing about a dictaphone, if anybody remembers, they sound very tinny. You know, they're got a whole different quality to the sound, which
yeah.
kind of adds this weirdness to it.
Right, right.
Huh.
And I guess the other point is when you're hearing us sing, Mark's got the high voice, I have the low voice. Always, you know, he sings about an octave higher than I do. So.
Uh-huh. And they're
castrati.
Yeah. They're not manipulated to be abnormally higher.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
At least he's never admitted to being. He has a child.
Yeah, right. Not that way. Okay, so it's called Sometimes Cool.
Yes.
And what does that mean?
Listen to the lyrics.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's Sometimes Cool. This is Cyberchomp on WMSE. It's cold.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like it, though, because it's so it's somewhat chaotic all the way up to the end, you know, then boom.
Yep. That was our free jazz.
Uh-huh. And it's sometimes cool.
And it's sometimes cool, right.
Mark, if you want to just, you can tighten this up here, if that's swinging around.
Oh,
on
no,
you.
No, I'm cool.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
cool.
So... That, you know, that in that particular song, you added the lyrics, but why?
Well, I had written this poem, and you know, I don't know what I was thinking about when I wrote that,
mm-hmm.
but and it was longer than that. And then Mark goes, well, we got to, you know, we're keeping it down to just, you know, really short and succinct.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought, well, that'd fit that break part, and I just kind of liked the sentiment. Because it was, you know, it's that song builds from very quiet
yeah.
to this grooving thing, and it's I was going like, you know, it's jacked up, not passive, but it's okay, you know,
yeah.
it's sometimes cool,
yeah. And the violin,
she's you know, that's not what she's asking. She's kind of like, why lyrics at all? Yeah. Why are you even singing?
Because we want to.
Because you want. Because it's your song, and you could do that.
Well, how did this go? I brought it up, but I was thinking of a completely different way of doing it. I said, actually, you know, let's do an album with, you know, lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
A whole album.
A whole album with lyrics. And it just turned out to be that it was better this way. This you know, if you go back to our first CD where we had the samples, mm-hmm. it kind of is kind of like that. We're taking the same process of very short little things that are kind of humorous, I think, hopefully.
Sure.
You know, and we throw those in there, you know, so.
Yeah. And it's just really the vocals like an instrument. It's another instrument.
Right.
So, and I think we kind of approached it that way.
And I miss singing. You know, I mean, every other band I've been, I sang a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss it to some extent. In fact, I'm working on a solo folk, well, I call it industrial folk project. And,
really?
Yeah, it's all you know, folk and rock songs that I play with a guitar and a weird beatbox and the adrenaline, which uh-huh. makes all these weird noises.
Yeah.
And people tell me, it does sound like industrial folk music.
Wow. Well, I'd like to hear that.
When I get it recorded, it's just been pretty much a live project. I do have some really, you know, low-tech recordings of some live performances, but
mm-hmm.
it's not there yet.
Would you think of putting out a solo release?
Yeah, I you know, in fact, Mark and I have talked about, you know, doing side projects and stuff, you mm-hmm. know. We just never get very far with him.
I got a little one, right?
Yeah,
I've got one right now. Helium device.
Yeah, and he's got a MySpace page already.
That's right.
Really?
That's right.
Helium
yes,
device.
Yes, you do.
Well,
you
no, but not page. But not for.
Oh.
I'm calling the band Baron von Sklenar and the Industrial Folk.
Oh yeah.
So.
Oh, very nice.
And Sklenar is actually an old family name. My grandfather changed the name from Sklenar to Skeel, and I'm just using it for that.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Yeah, and helium devices is really like sort of like the things that Jim didn't think were good enough to do anything with that I still like and want to do something. And they're sort of the weird little electronica experiment
Let's
kind of
rephrase
things.
That. It's Mark
the
has
cast
a real,
offs.
Mark has a real interest in the glitchy kind of stuff, you know, which is basically glitchy electronica doesn't have much melody or it's more, you know. I think playing with sound, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And he does some of that, and that's kind of what that project is.
Yeah, at least at this point.
How'd you come up with the name Helium Device?
Well, it's a name of a Cybertrump song, actually. Yeah. We have a song called Helium
it's
Device.
It's off of Scientist Industries.
Yeah.
It is.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me see.
We have too many songs for you.
Yeah, I know. Where's the CD?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. You brought it in.
I don't know.
So, yeah, I just
lost it. Oh,
right. So that's the side. Yeah, we each have some side things that we're kind
helium
of doing.
Helium device. That's right.
And if you ask us where that name came from, ask Mark because I have no idea.
I don't remember either. We keep a list of phrases and words. Mm-hmm. I was just working on it again today, you know, where I was kind of collecting all of the ones that we've had over the last few years because, you know, we're working on a song, and then Jim always has to, Jim, you know, you got to save it as something. So then Jim always says, well, what are we going to call this? And then you both look at each other, and you can't push save until you come up with a name, right? So we have a list, and we usually tend to pull off that list.
Uh-huh.
And many times they get changed.
Sure.
But, and sometimes they go through 3-4 changes by the time they're done. And then that's really confusing because you don't. You know, you don't remember anymore, you know, what this thing's called. But, Helium Device was, and I have an affinity for sort of like old sci-fi kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I tend to kind of collect words like that,
sure.
You know.
Has the title ever influenced a change in the music?
Well, a title actually starts, sometimes we write a song because of a title.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally. You know, just something springs from your imagination from it, you know.
Well, like the one today, we think that this little weird this sample that we're hearing, that I created off a keyboard, it doesn't really say anything. It's not a human voice, but yet it sounds kind of like it's saying something.
Uh-huh.
So we both said to ourselves, I think that it's saying, now we know. And it sounded apocalyptic. So we were, he has a wind chime in it. So we were both sort of imagining you're sitting on your deck out in the summer and it's a beautiful summer evening, and all of a sudden you see the item bomb has blown up, and it's rolling on its way to you to kill you, you know, and now you know when you will be dying.
So you can see how happy this song is.
So, and that's where we took off and started writing the song, you know. That's kind of led us in a way to what the feeling of that song would be.
I like it. Does it have like a low rumble in it?
Definitely.
Yeah, it's got a lot of low stuff in it. Yeah, you know, this whole thing started out, I told Mark, I have a 10-minute wind chime sample that I have a friend, she had some beautiful wind chimes. I just went over there and I set my recorder up for 10 minutes and recorded it. So there's no rhythm to it at all.
Great.
And no key.
Yeah.
And so that was what we were starting with. And then this whole thing came about.
Became apocalyptic.
Don't ask me how we got there.
I like it. And so that'll be on your next CD?
But see, you're just as bad as I am with that because I, Jim, you know, I said, well, why don't we do this? You know, and then I put this sample that's just sort of this ominous sounding voice, like a creepy voice that seems to be saying like, no, we know. You know, like that.
Right.
And so it's creepy, and then it has this weird sound, like somebody dragging their foot or something. And, you know, this is what I decided to suggest to put to the wind chimes. And, you know, he goes with it. That's what's great about our relationship. He's just like, oh, yeah. I'm like, do you think, no, we shouldn't do that, should we? Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what I thought.
Excellent. Let's see. Okay, we should move along because I don't want to lose time here.
In the Garden of Muir.
In the Garden of Muir. And this is my favorite. I do like this. It's just a lovely little song.
It is. It's very, very pretty.
Yeah.
It's a pretty ditty.
Well, this one's kind of hilarious because there are two of these songs that we start out with the jams, and Mark goes, I want to see if I can drum to these.
Well, like I said, Jim told you earlier, we were listening to Low, and I guess I was going to be the wife. Who's on drums.
Yeah, she's a basic minimalist drummer. Anyway, so we decided we'd at least put it to a click track.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing that survived from both those jam sessions were guitar parts. And the next two songs are these songs. They're In the Garden of Muir and Roughhouse.
Roughhouse.
And I thought, you know, Mark, you know, we both just walked away going like, man, what are we going to do with this stuff? This is a waste of time. Next thing I know, I'm getting files. He stripped off his drums and he's put on some drum loops that are really grooving. And he's made it into something we can do something with, you know? And it just, you know, it was just amazing.
Yeah, Jim had played, we kept his guitar. I mean, he played some guitar to me trying to fool around on the toms, and it was just pathetic. You know, it was just pathetic.
The tom part.
The guitar part was great, but my drums were just pathetic. And I actually said to him, I was like, you like, let me record that? You, like, why wouldn't you stop me? You know? But
we got to try everything. Come on.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's not, it couldn't have sounded like that. Did it really sound like that? Oh, my
God.
He's
never brought up playing drums again.
Right. So yeah, I packed them away, if you notice.
Yeah,
they're gone.
No, but how can drums sound bad? Were you just off the beat?
Oh, man, there's so many ways drums could sound bad. Can they ever sound good when you record them? It's tough.
No, yeah. Actually, drums are the hardest thing to record.
They're very
to get them sung. But it wasn't, yeah, you're right. It just wasn't going anywhere.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, I don't even know what I was playing to. And then he sends me these files back. It's like, dude, this stuff's kind of working. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, so I stripped everything but his guitar parts off. And then because we did it to a, we were smart enough to do it to a click track, I was then able to synchronize, you know, different drum loops and things like that. And so we started from that and then built a song around it for both of these next tracks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So this is, In the Garden of Muir is a song that almost didn't make it, but
right,
you were able to strip it down and reconfigure it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Exactly.
Excellent. I'm glad it made it. Poor little song.
It was close.
Yeah. This is Cyber Chump on WMSE. so glad that song was rescued. Because, and actually, in my notes, this is...
Stop in that one?
Yeah. In my notes, actually, this is the one that I said was the most cyber-chumpy.
Really?
Cyber-chump-like, I thought.
Well, it's the most, I think... yeah, because I can see references on just about every CD for that song. Because, yeah. I mean, the first one would have been Celestial Drone, probably. So the second one would be probably... maybe Amakala.
Oh, yeah, sure, okay.
Let's see.
Well, there's a bunch of branches in our tree, you know?
And, right.
And when I think of one, I think there's this theme of stuff that sounds like storms are coming and sometimes cool, that's sort of these jam kind of, you know, kind of intricate jam grooving kind of things going on. Like Tango Noir and Spanish Funk and just all going back. There's a whole history of those, which are, there's a certain kind, right? But there's like three or four, I think, big threads like that we have. Then there's more of the electronica kind of thing that we're doing. You know, like Patience maybe fits that, and Chatter and, you know, things like that are a little bit more keyboard-oriented and electronica-oriented.
Well, I think one of the references that... and it's actually, you know, got a bad rap, but, you know, I think there's a lot of fusion in ours, and fusion meaning that there's some jazz references, rock, and rhythm and blues. You know, it's all together. And then we kind of tried to update it with the modern electronica, and it's all the combination of all that stuff.
Yeah.
But we do definitely, you know, have some jazz inflections in some of our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
True. Do you guys do your own mastering of your discs?
Yeah, pretty much the whole process until we have somebody, you know, make the disc themselves, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we really like the recording process and the production of it. And I had somebody recently say to me something like, well, you guys should get a producer. And that's the fun part.
Yeah.
That's the part we like. You know, we're playing the instruments just for the reason of having something to produce.
Right.
You know, I mean, we really like the production. That's the piece. The playing the studio like an instrument.
Right.
That's
the
interesting
thing. In a lot of ways, there's two things. First off, it takes money. We aren't making a lot of money off this. So, you know, the more we can do ourselves, the more likely we're going to get product out. The second thing is that we like to do it. I mean, it is a laborious process. And I have to say, sometimes you would love to hand it off in the final stages and have somebody, mix this and bring it out, you know, but... I'm not sure, you know, I've never tried it. I don't know if I'd be happy with it.
No,
you know?
A producer would change your direction to his way of doing things.
Right.
Or her.
Right.
I mean, you guys need to be your own producers.
Yeah, but there's a finalization process in the modern music that doesn't have anything to do with the production. It has more to do with enhancement of the final disc. You know, they take it and they basically, the only thing they do, it might EQ it, you know, to give it... And process it to make it louder. I mean, that's really a process in itself these days.
Mm-hmm.
And a good friend of ours, Kevin Dooley, who's 001, he had his last one, he did that too. You know, he handed it off because he said, I needed another set of ears. Of course, working by yourself, I have another set of ears. You know, so we can just bounce it back and forth.
Yeah.
Where Kevin didn't, and he felt he really needed that.
But no, I can't see you guys going through a producer, but the mastering process is... You know, where all the EQ and stuff like that is kind of tweaked out, you know, levels and.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's basically to make it. I mean, these days, and if you go back, you know, in fact, Mark's just got it turned up. He's going back to these old records, expecting him to sound great, and he's going like, huh?
So this next one is Rough House.
Yeah, and I do like Rough House a lot. It's got a great drum start. The drums throughout this was really good.
I'm amazed you like this one because we thought this one was really like rocking. You know, it's really rocking.
Yeah, I like the grungy guitar. It's really grungy. I like it a lot. No, this one was it's very full.
It's a space
line.
Rock song.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one. I said, Mark, why don't you do the lead guitar part on this one? He goes, what? So he sends me the lead guitar part, thinking I'd trash it out, and so I. We left it in.
It's great. Yeah. It's
Thanks.
Very good. It's very good.
No, it's decided cool. I'd strap on a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And where'd the title come from?
Well, Rough House, I came up with that one. I was just thinking, it really sounded like, you know, some rough play going on. And I just, you know, I was actually thinking of some political things. And Mark's going, nah, we're not doing that trip. You know, we're keeping it, you know, away from that. And but it still worked with that song, you know, the term roughhouse.
So. Sure.
And I was interested, you know, it's one word. I had no idea it was one word. I had to look it up in the dictionary to find that out.
Oh.
It really is one word.
Okay. I would remember my parents, stop roughhousing, you kids.
There you go. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay, this is, and I do like it a lot. I think this is it's very good. Very Cyberjump. This is Cyberjump on WMSE. Cyberjump on WMSC. No, but that one, it's such a full song. There's so much there. I really like it, and it's just driving right to the end.
Right, and that's another one of, we started with Mark on drums, and all I did was play the feedback rhythm guitar part on that. And that was the starting point for the song. And then, you know, who knows where the rest of it came from.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just ripped everything off of it except for Jim's guitar, and then
we came up with the basic drum tracks, the bass line, and the lead guitar, and then I went in there and actually added most of the percussion, and then came up with it.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
Do you ever like take snapshots of, you know, like save this file here and now duplicate it and then add to it, save it?
Oh yeah, we can go back. We have
show the progression of
every change.
Okay. You can go back to the very beginning.
Well, see, that's what I would like to hear.
Like all 25
changes. Yeah, exactly. Just to hear what the, you know, the original, you know, from start to finish, because it's amazing how you guys, you know, weave these songs together. Just from
thanks.
You know,
well, would you like to do a documentary sometime?
Well, yeah.
Radio documentary.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
I think that would be really boring for people to listen to.
No, but it might be fascinating to hear the very first.
Oh yeah, how it
seed
started
of
and then,
the song.
Yeah,
and to see, you know, how it comes out.
Oh yeah, I agree. It would definitely. In fact.
Could be embarrassing.
We've always threatened to go back and do that, but we never seem to do it. Because we're spending time going forward. We're not really, you know.
Well, it can't be embarrassing because you've got the final product, you know.
Yeah, I guess. You're right.
You know.
Might be embarrassing because it sounds better than the final product.
Right, or like, why did you guys go in that direction?
Yeah.
You
know?
You had it.
Yeah. Well, it's a matter of opinion.
That's
it's
right.
It's your opinion, and that's all that matters. So,
yeah.
Well, right now, all the opinion that matters is yours and the public's.
Yeah.
That's right. Right now, because it's out there. We can't change it anymore.
We can't change it.
But by the way, you know, if you don't mind if I plug us, you know.
No.
Not like we haven't had any chance to talk about us. But if, you know, if there are people listening and they're interested in contacting us or just getting our music or anything, mm-hmm. if they can go to our website, cyberchump.com. It's very easy to find us and, mm-hmm. you know, go to our website. And we're on all your places, iTunes and, you know, all of that. You can go and buy directly from us at our MySpace page on our mm-hmm. Snowcap store. You can
Amazon.com.
Amazon, you know. You can anywhere, as we say, you can get us anywhere that matters.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if it's not there, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
Cyberchump.com. Is it yeah. the only?
That's our main website, and that leads to everything else. I mean, that'll give you the link
There's
to our
links.
MySpace
yeah,
page and, mm-hmm. and all of that. So, and if you're out there and you have a MySpace page and want to be our friend, please contact us. We're happy to
we
be
love
your
friends.
That's
can
right.
Can I be your friend even though I don't have a MySpace
no.
page?
No. I'm not a MySpace friend.
You have to have a MySpace
Yeah,
page
but MySpace is, you know, so like, what, 6 years ago, so, but, you know. Oh, well. Got to
yeah.
do it. But, yeah, we're just, you know, we're eager to hear from people. And if you like what we do, we'd love you to contact us. Don't be shy. And, mm-hmm. you know, certainly, like, our stuff's out there. So we encourage you to take a look at it. So, mm-hmm. Mary, I really appreciate that you let us talk about it.
Oh, you bet. Now, are the CDs also available locally in the stores?
No.
No.
No. Well, you know, it's interesting because, and it's just tough to do this because usually you have to do them on consignment. And it's
yeah.
really just such a hassle. We found it just much easier to go through mm-hmm. the internet.
Yeah. I mean, we're at a point where the project pays for itself. I mean, a number
yeah.
of people download our music and we've done pretty well. And it's, you know, it's really something how you can get this technology in the hands of the artists now, you know, so you don't really need a record label. Our
yeah.
strategy has not been to really want to get on a record label. What we've tended to do is try to get, a song on a big compilation,
mm-hmm.
and then that drives people toward us, and
yeah.
then they buy our CDs. Being on iTunes is phenomenal
mm-hmm.
because that's 90% of the people who download us, and
yeah.
you know we get thousands of downloads a year. So I mean it's really something that it's grown like that,
mm-hmm.
and we're you know. Through being on like your show and some shows like yours around the country, as well as being on some national shows like Echoes and
mm-hmm.
Music from the Hearts of Space and what's the other one called? Now I cannot remember. But Star Streams.
Oh yeah.
You know, then you get into like lots of households and all
mm-hmm.
when it happens, you can actually see it. I mean, we'll all of a sudden start getting a bunch of sales,
from
and certain places where you get sales from, certain electronic places, they send us an email and let us know.
Mm-hmm.
So then all of a sudden you'll go, oh, all of a sudden everybody in West Virginia is buying a CD from us.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on there? And then you'll find, you know, we got played there or whatever. So
mm-hmm.
it's kind of cool now having that ability to know that having that technology,
sure.
you know, because as an artist, you can track it you know, say, boy, I'd like to call someone up and thank them for playing
mm-hmm.
us.
Right.
You know, whereas in the 80s and the 90s, it was really tough. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, you tried back then to put a disc out and, you know, you didn't know if anybody was playing it and, you know, nobody could get a hold of you and you had to wait for a distributor and then a distributor wouldn't pay you
mm-hmm.
or they'd go out of business. Nowadays, it's really in your own hands, you know, so
yeah.
you get paid, you know, directly.
Yeah, you've cut out a lot of the middlemen. The only bad thing is, you know, I always like to go to the old used record stores. They were
mm-hmm.
the people who usually handled it and stuff.
Yeah.
It was so hard to do that because you were doing on consignment. You had to remember to go back every 3 months or something like
mm-hmm.
that and talk to them about it. And, you know, it's just tough. You know, musicians want to play music. They don't want
right.
to be going and checking about, you know, did my CDs sell and I need to pick them up because they're not going to keep them on consignment any longer. And, oh, we sold those or we gave them away and, you know, they're gone or whatever. You know,
yeah.
so it was just a hassle.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And do you get paid for all your downloads?
Well, I hope so. There's a few we're a little wondering about, you know, that seem to be on like some Russian sites where we see our music out there, the whole album for 99 cents. And
mm-hmm.
we're kind of like, well, who's that under, you know?
Yeah.
And so we're not. Some of it we can't track.
Right.
I think it's getting easier to manage because we're pulling a lot of stuff in to ourselves.
Right.
So.
We used to have some of ours through other labels, and then they went to iTunes and
mm-hmm.
things like that. And what we did is we kind of pulled it all back and managed it ourselves because we started realizing we're just losing, you know, we were losing that piece. We had to share it with somebody else,
yeah.
with the man.
Right.
So now, you know, we cut him out.
So...
It's actually better that way.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Well, and I think a lot of it is that all that's grown up. You know, we've grown up with it. You know, that was the way he had to do it back then, or we didn't know how to do it any differently. And luckily I had Mark, because Mark figures all this stuff out.
Yeah. Now, what about, like, CD Baby?
Yeah. Yeah, we're on CD Baby.
Okay.
Yeah.
It matters.
Which is cool.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
All right. Well, we have three more songs to play, and we're running out of time here. Our Wizards of Earth, the title track.
Yeah.
Kind of gloomy.
This started as an experiment.
Wait, this is connected to Sankara again.
That's right. Well, we had this experiment we did with Sankara, which was that we were going to lay out like 10 tracks of weird noises.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll just record 10 tracks of strange atmospheric noises, and then we'll mix it in different ways, and that will be different songs.
And didn't quite work out that way, but
it really
close.
Turned out to be two. One of them was what we ended up calling AE, because remember, originally Sankara was Abstract Earth.
Uh-huh.
Abstract Earth key bass, based on keyboards, and Abstract Earth guitar bass. And Abstract Earth key bass, I think, became... Did it become Abstract Earth?
No, it became...
what? One of the songs on Sankara. And then...
Waking in the Dream... Or, yeah, Waking in Dream Time.
Waking in Dream Time.
Okay. And then this one became... Our Wizards of Earth, which I think Jim kind of wrapped his head around it, and it really started sounding more like maybe our Led Zeppelin song.
Well, what did it was, couldn't figure out what to do with this thing. You know, we had all these samples floating around in thin air, and there was no drums on it. I thought, drums! So I did drums to it, and we actually were talking about putting it on Sankara until I did that, and I was like, eh. So...
Yeah, in the lum.
Oh,
the,
and this was also one of those we put away for like a year because we thought it stunk, and then we listened to it again and we're like, "It's brilliant."
Actually, Mark put it away for a year and said that I hadn't listened to it. You know, I was never pulling it out again. He said, "Have you listened to that lately? Because I like it now." Because he was the one that said it stunk.
Well, I like the drums a lot. They
never
sound
listen
live.
To me.
Don't listen to him.
Or just wait a year.
That's right.
Yeah, really. Things will change.
Right. Whenever he sends me something, he now even writes, "Don't give me your opinion today. Wait a week, then tell me what you think."
Well, that's good.
You learn about yourself this way.
Sure, exactly. Do you listen then for the whole week, or do you just listen to it
no,
once?
No, I'm just so pissed. I'm like, you know, I want to write him right now what I think about this. But I'll listen. All right.
I'll wait.
I'll wait.
Okay, this is a title track from Cyberchum's latest CD. It's called Our Wizards of Earth.